Comptroller Sean Scanlon is sounding the alarm about the rumors surrounding the Connecticut Sun. Will the team actually head to Boston? Do we have a shot at keeping the team in Connecticut but just moving it to Hartford? Will the WNBA just end up doing whatever it wants with it? Comptroller Sean Scanlon joins us now. Hey, Comptroller, how are you?
Good morning.
I'm telling you, I personally have the rumor swirling in my own household being married to a Boston fan. But this has been, I think, mayhem all summer long with our listeners and just Connecticut residents in general. What clarity can you bring to us with this?
Well, here's the clarity. Earlier this year, the Mohegan tribe, which has owned this team for 20 plus years, decided that they were going to explore selling the team. And despite the reports that came out that seemed like it was a done deal and they were going to Boston, that was really more of a PR campaign on Boston's part than it was an actual true thing that was really going to happen. Because, in fact, the Mohegan tribe actually wants to keep the team here in Connecticut. There is an offer on the table right now that matches the price offered by Boston. And what's happening and why I spoke out last week is because the WNBA, which is really controlled by the NBA, is blocking that team simply because they want to move the team not to Boston, but to Houston. And they want to pay the tribe $75 million less than is being offered by a guy in Connecticut and an ownership group here in Connecticut, simply because they want to move the team to that market.
So it seems like a no-brainer then, and the Mohegan tribe is still in charge of it. Why wouldn't they just take the deal then with the Connecticut mystery investor group?
Because the way this works and the way a lot of sports leagues work is that these powerful corporate special interest sports leagues have oversight and final say over what deals get done. And so the tribe wants the team to stay here. There's a dude who's willing to pay $325 million to keep the team here and also have them split time between Hartford and the casino, which I think is a really big win for the state from an economic development perspective and great for the city of Hartford. But the WNBA is blocking that deal right now because, like I said, Melissa, they want to offer $75 million less, buy this team from the tribe for less money, and then ship the team over to Houston.
So then this probably sounds like a silly question, and I consider myself to be a pretty big sports girl, but is there oversight over the WNBA? I mean, essentially, if they're blocking the deal, who tells them to unblock it? I mean, first of all, just from a money standpoint, why in the world would they take a deal $75 million less than what they're being offered right now? I mean, even if they decide to go to Boston, that sounds like a better deal than just giving it back to the WNBA and having them move to a totally different part of the country. But who can unblock the WNBA?
I think the fans can, which is why I spoke up. You know, comptrollers don't go viral on social media, but I had a TikTok story on this last week that got a lot of views. I'm sure got the attention of the WNBA.
It got my attention on vacation. That's why I bothered you. I'm like, wait a minute. I didn't even know you were involved with this. You're like, I'm not. I'm just talking about it.
The mayor of Hartford, Runar Lamplam, a friend of mine, has come out with a similar message. And look, if you look in the comments of that TikTok story, there's a lot of WNBA fans, not just here that are fans of the Sun, but nationally, that are annoyed about this and frustrated by it and think that it's not good. And so I think these big corporate sports leagues respond to one thing and one thing only, which is money. And they want to make money on this deal. But I think they also are worried about what happens when fans turn on them, especially Melissa, at a time. This league has not been profitable for 20 plus years. But for the first time in a very long time in the last couple of years, their TV viewership is up. They're selling merchandise for the first time because they've got these bona fide superstars like Caitlin Clark and Paige Beckers that are just drawing attention and eyes to this league for the first time in a long time, rightfully so. And now the last thing that they're going to want is a revolt from the fan base in a state like Connecticut, which is the basketball capital of the world and a huge, huge part of women's basketball nationally. So I just think that you're going to continue to see fans revolting against this. I think public pressure does matter. And if you're somebody who is a fan of the Connecticut Sun, speak up, use your voice, tell the world via social media that you're ticked off about this. And I think collectively our voices are going to be heard and hopefully they approve this deal.
So that's the other thing, too, Comptroller, is the clock is ticking, right? I mean, essentially, they have already signed on to do one more season. But then after that, I mean, I'm not trying to be a cynic. I'm just trying to be a realist. If the season ends and the WNBA is not moving, what happens, I guess?
Well, the Tribe could decide not to sell the team, which I think is certainly in play. They don't have to sell the team. They're making money. I think it's like selling a house, right? Sometimes you and your husband decide to list your house just to kind of see what's out there, right? And sometimes if it's not working for you and the offers don't come in right, or maybe it just doesn't feel right, you just pull the offer, right? You just pull the house down and you stop selling it. And that certainly could be something that they would do. The other thing is, yeah, I should say about Boston, right? The WNBA is blocking that deal too because they want Boston to pay the initial license fee of a new franchise, which is $250 million cash to the league. So the reason the Boston guys are so hot and we're trying to do this big PR thing to say we got a deal to buy the Sun is because they are trying to put pressure on the WNBA too to allow them to possibly buy another team, whether it's the Sun or somebody else,
right?
Because those guys don't want to pay the $250 million up front and then whatever it costs to buy a team. So there's all this internal, you know, politics going on with the WNBA. But at the end of the day, the WNBA is just trying to maximize as much money as they can, even at the expense of fans. I think that that's BS. It's why I called it out. It's why I want the people of Connecticut to, you know, reach out and share their frustration about this. Even if you've got 12 followers on Twitter, that still matters. And I hope people do it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I always think greed is just, it's so blatant. And when you break it down like that, I mean, again, granted, like I said, I'm married to a Boston fan. So he loves his Celtics and he would love the idea of now having a WNBA team inside TD Garden with his Celtics and the Bruins. So I will say that, full disclosure. But even that is garbage. The fact that they would make Boston then pay, you know, that amount of money on top of it. It just seems like a money grab and you're being greedy and you should just be happy. The fact that I think the WNBA, which it should have had its time well ahead of where it is now, but it's finally, as you said, it's profitable. It's got eyeballs on it more than ever before. And it's only going to grow from here. That's terrible. I just think it's terrible. So I agree with you. People should speak out about it. And let's see if we can keep them here in Connecticut and bar anything. Maybe they just don't sell at all. So we'll see. Yeah. It's no secret. Our property tax system here in Connecticut is pretty broken. And many people are wondering what can be and what is happening to fix it. And so Comptroller Sean Scanlon is here. And actually, you are in the midst of doing, I don't want to call it campaigning, but certainly reaching out to the public to really have these conversations and find some solutions to the problem ahead of a new report that's going to be coming out this fall. Talk a little bit about this, Comptroller.
Yeah, well, the property tax system, as you just said, is broken in Connecticut, and everybody knows it, and everybody has talked about this, and there's been 10 similar efforts to the one that I'm doing over the course of the last few years. Every couple of years, somebody says, let's fix the property tax. And then nothing happens. And the reason for that is because it's a very, very complicated problem to fix. And my friends who, you know, pay attention to what I do think that I'm insane for trying to do something about this. But I think that this is like the final boss of all problems that we face as a state. And if we don't fix this, it's really hard for us to fix all the other things that people talk about that are problems, like housing or like electrical prices or like the cost of living here in Connecticut. All of that comes back in my mind to this dysfunctional system that we have in place that is literally based on feudalism in England, right? Where you paid taxes to some sort of landlord or property owner for you to live there. And if we don't get serious about fixing it and actually doing something about it, I think we're just going to keep kind of treading water here as a state. And I think it's time for us to do it. And I've been asking the people of Connecticut to reach out and literally text me. You can text me at 860-266-7557 and tell me your story or tell me what you're mad about. And I hope that we can work on this.
You're just giving out your cell phone number?
Yeah.
Cool.
I don't get texted at 2 a.m. People are literally just text me what's on their mind. And I think people respect it. So, you know, sincerely, I'm reading it. I'm responding to people. If you want to email me, you can do that too. Or you could send me a letter even. But however you want to do it, we're just gathering stories and gathering feedback and, frankly, gathering ideas. And next month, we're going to put out a report with some ideas about what we can do to fix the system.
So, as you mentioned, Comptroller, you've been already sort of having these conversations, and what would you say are some of the big takeaways so far, you know, especially ahead of this report that's coming out next month?
Well, the problem is twofold. On the taxpayer side, the property tax is a tax on unrealized gains, meaning if you make $50,000 at your job and then you get a $50,000 raise, you now make $100,000. You've gone into a new tax bracket, but you've got more income to pay that tax. Your home goes up in value all the time, and your taxes then go up, but you don't actually get anything, and you don't have liquid money to pay those higher taxes. Mm. And so that is what's broken, number one, on the taxpayer side. What's broken on the government side of it is that these cities and towns only have one way to finance your police officers, your firefighters, your schools, and that's this property tax and the car tax. And every year, the demands of that, just through basic common economics like inflation, just get higher, right? And so they keep going back to the same well of people who can't afford these taxes and this tax on unrealized gains to finance everything that they need to do. It's an unsustainable system on both ends. And so what I'm interested in doing is, yeah, there are obvious solutions out there that people have floated that could change this, right? You could tax the rich. You could create a new sales tax. All those things are politically unpalatable. Otherwise, we would have done them a long time ago.
Right.
What I'm interested in is, are there other things that people haven't really been thinking about that could help us fix this or begin to fix it that would then get some momentum behind it? And then maybe down the road, some of the larger term solutions that people are afraid of and that are like the third rail of politics become easier because people say, wait a minute, these few things that we've done have made big progress. What if we made even more progress? I'm somebody who I've talked about on your show a zillion times. I love to solve what people see are like these impossible problems to solve. It's always what I've been attracted to in my career. I used to run Tweed Airport. That was always seen as, we're never going to build that airport up. Now it's built up. I reformed the municipal pension system when I first got into this job. Hadn't been done in 40 plus years. We saved the taxpayers $800 million. I just love trying to solve these big problems that everyone else is afraid to solve. And I think sometimes when people say, what's the secret? How do you do it? The secret is, like everything in life, you just try. And most people just don't even try to solve these problems. I don't have any special talents. I just am not afraid to fail.
Mm. Well, and to your point, Comptroller, I'll be curious to see what solutions could come about with the property taxes, because you did mention another buzzword, which are the car taxes. And that's been a huge controversy in Connecticut for years as well. So I would imagine that's a separate entity, right? When people are texting you or reaching out to you, you're solely talking about houses, your property taxes,
not car taxes. I'm talking about everything.
Everything.
No, car taxes in there too. And look,
okay,
my friend in the legislature, they want to get rid of the car tax. So do I. But you can't just get rid of the car tax and
then where does
you
that
claim
money go,
victory.
Right.
Yeah, because then the mayors in First Amendment are, wait a minute, dude, that's 40% of my revenue. Where do you think I'm possibly going to make that up, right? So we can't like do it like a whack-a-mole thing. You know, Ryan Fazio, good guy, somebody I like working with. He's a Republican running for governor right now. One of his big platform ideas is to cap property taxes. Sounds great. Makes a lot of sense from a logical perspective. But if you cap the property tax, you're just tying the hands of the mayors and first selectmen unless you solve the underlying problem that they're already bumping up against, which is just that it's a never-ending position that they have to be in to raise the property tax because they have no other thing. I'll give you a good example of that. I was recently at a community that has a giant fair in Connecticut. We're about to get into fair season. This guy was a far-right MAGA Republican who said, I hate taxes, But you know what? The state should allow us to tax this fare because my little small town has to pay state troopers to police our streets. We got to pay ambulances to come in and take people out when they get drunk on the fare. It's the biggest single event that we have in our community every year. We get nothing from it, right? You go to towns in Connecticut that in the summertime, they're flooded with people who list their houses on Airbnb down at the shoreline. Towns can't tax Airbnbs. So again, there's little small things here that nobody talks about, like just giving towns more freedom to tax if they want to, that could dramatically change their ability to stop burdening the people with the car tax and the property tax. And again, I want to explore those things. And again, people can text me if they have other ideas. That I'll give you the number again. It's 860-266-7557. And, you know, again, sincerely just looking to get some ideas from folks. We've got some good ideas. We've heard. I'm talking to mayors and first selectmen, but the answers are out there and this problem can be solved. We just got to believe in ourselves and have a little courage to fix it.
Well, Comptroller Sean Scanlon, I appreciate this and thank you for tackling it. And I, again, look forward to that report coming out next month and look forward to seeing some solutions down the road. Thank you so much.